historians, so many in the media, continue to support the use of the atomic bomb against Hiroshima and even Nagasaki.
And now Trump wants to put a nuclear plant on the moon.
Yeah, a nuclear reactor on the moon. So to me, there's certainly no nuclear taboo as far as I can see, and that makes it scary for possible use again. And that's the reason to keep returning to, may seem like history, but it's very, very, very timely today.
Greg Mitchell, and thank you so much for being with us. Director of the new film, now streaming on PBS.org, The Atomic Bowl, Football at Ground Zero and Nuclear Peril Today. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
Bush Radio Cape Town, 88.7 WRHU Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh, Radio Carnegie Tech. You're listening to the One World Radio Show. We're joined today by the lovely Paul Kersey, as well as co-host Ricky Huber. I'm Cody Millar. Let's get started. How are y'all doing today?
Good. How are you, Cody?
It's been a bit of a week. You know, we just had was co-broadcasting the Red Hook Pride on one of our affiliate stations, WKZE, up in Red Hook, New York. And Yeah, it's been an effort to try and stay cool in this extreme heat wave we have in the northeastern United States.
How was that, Cody? How was the broadcast up there?
It was a lot of fun, you know. It was my first time going to the Beck Hook Pride. And, you know, that weekend we also had a remote from the Catskill Solstice Festival. So that was really cool to see. Like, there's just so much to do. Like, I don't know. Upstate New York, or like the Hudson Valley, is just such an interesting place. And it's cool to see, like, there still is that love of community radio there.
That is cool. And we're going to talk more about that today, the love of community radio, with one of the main stations that broadcasts the show is WRHU, obviously, Radio Hofstra University. And WRHU has a poet in residence, the lovely Miss Paula Kersey, who, as Cody mentioned, joins us today. Paula, thank you so much for coming on.
I'm so happy to be here. This is such a great collaboration. This show is amazing to me that it's international, and I'm pleased to be part of it.
Now, Paula, you're the poet in residence. So explain for those who don't know, because you think of a radio station, and you often say this to the student staff and volunteer staff at our all-staff meetings, you always say, so why do we have a poet in residence? Describe more about what you do and what the purpose of your role is here at this community radio station.
Well, thank you for that. So I was honored to be the Nassau County Poet Laureate for 2 years. And when I received that accolade, the radio station said, well, why don't we also make you poet in residence, which was a lovely honor. I've been on WRHU for 24 years, hosting a show called Calliope's Corner, which is the place where poets and songwriters meet, because my love of lyrics and my love of poetry, to me, you know, is connected in that regard. So we interview poets and songwriters and talk about their process and, you know, why they are the creatives that they are and where does that creativity come from. So one of the things that I do at the station as poet in residence is speak to the students at all staff meetings. And the concept there is to encourage them to understand what is the connection with, as you had just said, poetry and radio. And the major connection is just that, human connection. Because as a poet, we are out there trying to make that emotional connection with a person, maybe one-on-one or through reading. And so is the radio host. We're trying to emotionally create a connection or a mental picture, say, with the audience that's out there listening to us on the airwaves.
And how did you first discover your love of poetry?
Good question. So I always was a rhymer, even as a little girl. I would rhyme things. It would be funny. And the sounds of things would just hang in my ear. So I always was a rhymer, even as a little kid. And my parents would laugh at me, you know. As I got older, I was a diary writer. I loved my little diary. I kept it under my bed kind of thing, you know. You wake up in the morning, you have a thought or a dream, you write it down. So that's how it started, journaling. Was my thing as a high schooler. And then I started learning about poetry in high school and enjoyed English class so much. And I enjoyed history class so much. It was all about, you know, who did what to who, when, and why. You know, I just loved English and social studies. So it just grew from there.
And how do you kind of take that? Because you studied psychology and communications, correct? That was what you had studied back in school?
Absolutely. Yes, I did.
So how do you take kind of this, how do you take, because you were the poet laureate, obviously takes a while to get there. So how did you take what you studied in school and apply, how did you apply poetry throughout your life if that's what you had studied in school, basically, is what I'm trying to ask you here.
I am a member of the National Poetry Therapy Association. The poetry therapists that are involved with that association are counselors, therapists, psychologists, educators, and I've come to learn as I became an educator, and that's what I did for a living. I became a school counselor, and that's the psychology part. poetry can be an effective tool in self-help and in counseling. So that's how I married the two interests. And my love for radio was brought to me through, you know, people that you meet, networking. And I was on a hotline for years at Adelphi University, and it's called We Care. And down the hall was WBAU, another college radio station from Adelphi. And I became friends with, you know, the people down the hall. And that's how I got connected to radio. And then I started doing an informational broadcast show at WBAU before I came over to Hofstra, as I said, 24 years ago, to do Calliope's Corner. So poetry is a therapeutic tool for many, many people to self-help, self-aware, self-heal. And I say that often, that poetry does heal in so many ways, especially in community.
That's wonderful, Paula. And I want to get a sense of, what does your writing process look like? Do you write every day, or are you waiting for inspiration? Like, how does a poem start for you?
Yeah, definitely on inspiration. Something happens in the news, or I hear a sound. Sound, clearly, since I'm in radio, is a huge part of my writing process. I may hear, hypothetically, a bird chirping, you know, and that will inspire a thought. So it's by inspiration.
They say that a lot of writing is rewriting. What point do you know, like, when a poem is finished?
Yeah, that's a difficult concept that many poets have a hard time with, as well as, I think, songwriters and visual artists. They all say, you know, when is it done, right? But for me, I start with what I call a reflection. And Cody, maybe, you know, as you may understand what I mean, when you're writing and you're getting thoughts out, your process is a reflection of what you really want to see at the end. So I do go through several revisions. And then there are groups that I belong to where I can go and say, okay, I'm having trouble fleshing this out. And we workshop it. From that workshop, you get a finished product. Other times, you put it away. Don't look at it for a bit and then go back and re-examine. And believe it or not, there are times you think something's finished, but it's not. You go back. I've gone back to things 2 years old and rewrote them. So Walt Whitman changed his poetry with so many different additions. So it's not an odd thing to go back and revision and create another edition of something.
And how does reading a poem aloud change it for you or for your audience?
Well, I belong to a great community here, particularly on Long Island, that is committed to community poetry reading at open mics. And we all believe that the actual telling of the poem to an audience has a tertiary component of healing also, because it exhibits compassion from the audience and empathy from the audience. So we've actually named that concept. We call it contemporary expressionism. Myself and Peter Dugan, another Nassau County poet laureate emeritus who I've been collaborating with. So contemporary expressionism is the current vibe, the current thing that's happening. Expressionism it's more than just that 20th century definition, you know, where the artist, the visual artist, right, presents their art, and there's some type of emotional experience or some kind of memory that made them write that or print that or paint that. But in writing, the modern poetry open mic scene, you know, it's overt nowadays. It's not nonfiction. They're telling their personal stories. And the result of that is this communal empathetic appreciation for the performance poetic story. And there's an exchange of understanding, an exchange, you know, the poet listener to the writer performer. And inevitably, people will come up, you know, to me or to, or I'll go up to another poet after I heard what they read and I'll say, wow, you know, I felt that literally, not figuratively. I went through that same thing. And then there's a conversation. So there's a lot of healing going on in these open mic communities.
Have readers or listeners ever interpreted your work in ways that surprised you when they told you about that?
Yes, I think that happens often. I belong to a classical poetry reading group, and we read the classics from Chaucer to Frost. And we sit around and what was he thinking? Well, or why did she write that? And then we do a little bit of background on the history of the person and where they came from. And, oh, that's why, you know. So yes, that happens to me, too. You know, why did you write that? What did you mean by that line? Especially in these open mic communities, you know, we have those discussions.
In the open mic communities, you founded you were a co-founder of the Acoustic Poet Network.
Yes.
How does something like that come to be? And how do you get, because we were talking about sharing, Cody and I, we were all talking about sharing your poems. How do you inspire people to go up there and share what they've written? Because that's a very vulnerable thing in itself. Writing it down is vulnerable, but I think sharing it's even more so. So how do you find an organization like that and then kind of inspire people to get involved?
Yeah. Well, the Acoustic Poets Network started out as a band. There were a group of us that showed up at open mics that were also music open mics. So it's songwriters, guitarists, singers, and poets. The lyric thing really is where that came from, because I started to write lyrics for other musicians. Then it became what I call a posic, which is a combination of poetry and music. So it became more of a poem with music under. So from the Acoustic Poets Network, that grew out because the network grew. So one person moved, another person, you know how bands break up, right? So what do you do then? So I just call it the network. And what I try to do now is I try to promote other poets as I do on the radio show, right? Bring other poets in and encourage their work, to let people hear their work. And at the open mic communities, to answer your question directly, how do you encourage people? I think it's family of people that are in any kind of membership group, they encourage people. I think it's a phenomenon that happens with any quote unquote club. You know, you're in a club in high school and you're in the theater club and doesn't everybody root you on, right? You're in the band at school and your friends root you on. So I think it's a supportive environment, and that's why it's easier than to encourage people to participate.
Because we were discussing the Acoustic Poet Network, how do you find that it's evolved over the 25 years that you've been involved with it? Because you're talking about the scene now, how has the scene changed?
The scene has changed dramatically, and I will use actually the word "the scene." I'm also involved with a magazine called The Scene. And the magazine has been around now for 2 years. And what that group does, M.T. Parisi, Stephen Clifford, and Vincent Colon have coordinated a magazine that illustrates and highlights all of the open mic scenes here on Long Island, from the Bridges to the Forks. And now we're expanding into Staten Island, into New York City and the Bronx, into the boroughs, to emphasize these little pocket of communities that are supporting each other through the arts. And also there's book reviews and interviews. So I'm doing some of the interviews as well, since that's my wheelhouse. And those interviews are being printed in The Scene. Focus on the actual question, how has the scene changed? There's a plethora of opportunity to participate as a creative in the art of spoken word, in the art of poetry, in the art of writing, even prose. There are many pockets of communities that people can access and enjoy.
And how would you say, because you put together, in addition to the Acoustic Poet Network, are the festivals that you put together for poetry, is that connected to the network or is it a different thing?
The network supports that, yes. The network is the sponsor of the poetry festivals, and the poetry festivals also. They're bringing the tribes together, you know, bringing the groups together to enjoy each other and enjoy each other's art.
And how would you say putting a festival or an Acoustic Poet Network together, how does that differ than putting together Calliope's Corner, your radio show on WRHU?
Well, it's connected in that, you know the people and you're trying to get the people to have an opportunity to be highlighted and share their work or share their art. So on Calliope's Corner, I do what you're doing now. You're interviewing me. I'll interview a poet or an artist and songwriter, and I will get deeper into their work and discuss with them their body of work, right, their canon of work. Doing the Acoustic Poets Network and doing the festivals, it's really about throwing out a net and saying, okay, this festival is available here. If you love this type of art, we're here together in community to have a festival, to enjoy all different aspects of it. Do you want to learn how to write a poem? Do you want to learn how to publish? Do you want to learn how to speak strongly and do a great oration, to do a narration of some sort? You know, so this is what the whole festival is about. So it's all producing. You know, what's the connection? It's all producing.
And when you put the show together, like on a week-by-week basis, how do you, because you've been doing Calliope's Corner since 2001, right? That's...
Yeah, I'm moving on my 25th year. It's crazy.
25 years. So how have you seen that change over 25 years?
I can certainly say, and I think you would all agree because you're all in radio, I know how to keep the interview to a point where I don't have to do 3 hours of editing. How has that changed? I don't think it's changed much because people that are writers want to have an opportunity to share what they're writing. So I haven't found it change that much as far as the interest of the publishers, the interest of the PR people that reach out and say, you know, can we have an interview? There's always someone out there that wants to and will appreciate the opportunity to be on radio.
And would you say working at the, doing it at a college station? Because I know this was, I believe, the first time, Rachel Camille, right? This was the first time you involved, or a student got involved in the show? Was that, this was the first time, right, with Rachel getting involved?
I've had many students involved with Calliope's Corner, particular Mariama Kaba, who was one of the leaders with Cody, who started One World Radio. Mariama and I did a whole series of interviews with poet laureates, and she was an incredible asset. And Cody, if you remember, sometime in the past, we had an open mic at WRHU. And you were there.
I remember reading a poem there.
It was a great night. We brought the local community into WRHU, and the students were there, and I cannot tell you how excited the local community poets that came to that event were. So happy to meet with the students. We had Catherine with a K, if you remember her. She was great. So we done that before in the past. I also worked with Gary Duff, who was an incredible asset to Calliope's Corner. So Rachel Camille now is joining us to have her own slot, which that is a little different. She is going to be taking on in the fall, the third Thursdays of every month. That will be her focus will be focusing on songwriters and the lyric of the songwriters through the Unispan record label, which is very cool. That's a very cool connection that Rachel is developing. So I'm looking forward to that new aspect.
I'm going to piggyback to something. Cody, what was your poem about?
To be honest with you, I have no recollection, but it just speaks to the power of Paula's like infectious energy to get people interested in poetry and willing to do things they're not really always wanting to do. So
I was going to say, when Paula was talking about the third Thursdays of every month, the songwriting thing, it brought a smile to my face because you could see the passion in Paula as she's talking about it. And I'm not trying to blow smoke. That's just the real truth.
Definitely.
Well, that's cool. See, and isn't that the power of radio too? That's just it. Through radio, we can actually really successfully feel an engagement with the listener. You're listening to me talk and you're hearing my passion. And that's what's so beautiful about radio.
Does having all the kids come in, I'll call us the kids, does having the kids come in and work with you on Calliope's Corner and these poetry events, does that reinvigorate you and excite you about it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think anyone who's in any career will say that they go through peaks and troughs in their energy towards that job. For me, when I meet someone who is sparked by it all, that re-energizes me 100%.
And you were saying when you brought in different poet laureates and you interviewed them, when you became the Poet Laureate of Nassau County, A, how does that happen? And B, what kind of extra responsibility or weight do you feel when that happens to kind of spread why poetry matters?
So I'll do how did it happen first. So I would have to thank WRHU for giving me the platform to be heard by many, many people. And having done that for 24 years and having been a member of several poetry open mic communities, the Nassau County Poet Laureate Society became aware of my work. So because of that, somebody nominated me. That's how it works in Nassau County. You get nominated anonymously. So I, to this day, don't know who nominated me. And I received an email. You've been nominated. So would you like to pursue this? I was nominated three times. The first two times I had said thank you, but no. The first time I was still working full time as a counselor, and I said, I can't juggle this. It's a little much. The second time I was taking care of my elderly mom, so I knew that was a juggle. So third time's a charm. And I said, okay, let me put in my papers, you know. So I presented what they asked me to. I went on an interview. And so I think, as they say, the top three people were interviewed, and the committee chose me. The way it works in Nassau County is you are affirmed by the Nassau County Poet Laureate Society. And my responsibilities were to participate in their review, which is an anthology that they have once a year. It's a poetry contest throughout, not just Nassau County. That poetry contest is open to the entire world. So, Lydia, if you want to apply to the Nassau County Poet Laureate Society poetry contest, please do. It's open to anyone. Cody, you want to find that old poem? Send it in. And that was my responsibility for the 2 years, as is whoever is the poet laureate now, is Alan Samarjan here in Nassau County. And there's a judging of those poems, and there's a contest, and that was a big responsibility as far as a required responsibility. Beyond that, it was whatever I had hoped to do. So that's where the Acoustic Poets Network came in, and that's how all those festivals got started, and my open mics got larger. I now do two open mics one in the city of Long Beach here in New York, and one in Hicksville, New York. So, it just grew from there.
Like, do you see a difference in how younger generations are using poetry compared to when you started?
Absolutely, I do, Lydia. Absolutely, I do. I see it to be now the poetry is much more overt, directly related to something that may have happened to them, some emotional release. Much of the poetry is what I call narrative, or possibly even a dramatic dialogue almost of a story. And it's very urban. The young people are urban writers. And it's a style that has just grown and grown.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I think it has to do with some of the things I was talking about, that contemporary expressionism, the need to express themselves. And maybe a lot of that has come from several things. I'll say COVID, the isolationism that everyone has gone through. So in the time that we've come from COVID to now, the open mic scene has blown up. You can go on Eventbrite. You can go on Facebook. You can find the all over the world. You can find open mics all over the world. And also here in the United States, I think a lot of, you know, things that happen here, there's political confusion, there's social unrest, and those things too are causing people to want to examine and flesh out their free speech.
I second that. I agree with you totally with that. In your view, what's the responsibility of a poet in today's world?
It's interesting you asked me that question, because I just wrote a poem recently about the responsibility of free speech, free frequency radio, free access to press, and what's our responsibility towards that. I called it Remove the Litter. There's so much litter, meaning, you know, bad stories going on. There's so much confusion. There's so many traffic signs saying, no, don't do that, and or don't go there, in our cultural milieu nowadays. So I do think that the poet has the responsibility to just tell the truth. And if we look back at poets from the 1500s, poets from the 1800s, it doesn't matter. If we do the real research, poets have always been telling a story, telling the truth about something that's happened in their world. I could talk about the talking blues guitarists and singers in the United States, you know, the Arlo Guthrie, for example, telling the truth about union workers and telling the truth about what's happening in the government. So also the poet's responsibility is to talk about beauty and nature and all of the other wonderful things that people relate when they think of the word poetry. So I don't want to unexamine that. That has so much value. The meditation of a poem is so important. And it's a small snippet. It's not a long story. It's not a novel. Doesn't take too much time to absorb. And that's the beauty of poetry also.
Paula, you had mentioned that you wrote some poems about free frequency radio. Would you mind sharing that with the listening audience right now?
Thank you so much for asking me to read a poem. How cool. Okay, so I do want to share this one poem with you. I wrote for an all-staff meeting at WRHU and presented it to Josephine Maieta because Josephine had a 7-year anniversary at the time. And it's called Radio Poem. And because people often ask me, you know, what does poetry have to do with radio, as we were chatting before. Okay. Radio Poem. A question I am often asked is about radio's history. How do you understand its past and mystery of how radio's attraction can last? When the old rank and file gathered around the dial, they chose a station, felt a relation to whatever was being shared. They listened to someone who cared. They were all connected. You bet when they listened to their favorite show on the old radio set, as time progressed for the rest, they searched for the dial to find what attracted them then, to hear the story that aligned on a transistor, a boombox, or during their drive time. Today we hear Josephine, far and near, on the scene for years, just like in a poem. She guides listeners to find their home. It's a common base, a safe place, where we can all sit together around a fireplace. Radio, it's a cultural connection. It allows anonymous reflection on the DJ's words, regardless of language. What a privilege to be on this sound stage, on 88.7, on the radio with the power of words, on the go, and sabato italiano. Students, you ask, what can you do to make it flow? Create a community that can grow. Cultivate a place for listeners to find their niche of heaven. For 1 year, for two, but for Josephine, like seven, it's all about human connection. It's all about human connection. Poem.
And there was another one, right, that you read this year, Paula? All right, Cody, you say what you were going to say. Go, Cody, go.
No, I was just like, we have such wonderful guests, don't we? That was amazing. Thank you, Paula.
Cody, thank you. So, yeah, it's all about human connection.
There was another one, right, Paul, that you had. I know you usually sing it as spoken word, but maybe you could read it as a poem if you have that on you, a chance.
So it's a really quick little ditty. Here it goes. Words that shine through. Words that shine through. Like respect and humility, love and dignity, ways to find yourself in this world, ways to know yourself in this world. Words that shine through. That's it.
Bravo, bravo.
So that was about, you know, what is the connection? We're all using words. Use our words wisely. Use our words with conviction. Use our words that matter and share healthy, positive messages with each other because people are listening.
So how do you come up with, when you wrote the poem about like the radio, what inspires you about radio to write that poem?
Well, I did have to come up with something to prepare to talk to the students about. And it's not a very long, you know, soliloquy when I'm presenting at the all staff meeting. So I wanted to also honor Josephine. So I really wanted to make that connection. Why is there a poet in residence at WRHU? And what does poetry have to do with radio? And it's words. It's creativity. It's the human connection.
Paula, I'd like to know, what legacy do you hope to leave as a poet and educator?
I would like to leave the legacy of how important community engagement is in developing healthy communities. We spend a lot of time as educators talking about school to work transfers, high school to college, school to college transfer. But we don't emphasize enough about our young people leaving school and going to their community. And what's happening in your community? Where can you grow in your community? And what is your hobby that you may have had when you were in high school? And how can you allow that hobby to continue, or maybe even job, continue in your community? How can you give back, and how can you relate to others in your community? And that's something that I've been working on even with our local school here. We give a scholarship now to young people who are poets that are in a school program here in Long Beach, New York. And one is called the Shore Poets Award to a talented writer. And the other is award called Able Voices, which was really spearheaded by one of my colleagues, Sharon Denson, from Disabilities in Connecticut Northeast. And the Able Voices is given to a student who self-reports they have a disability. So how do we get people from school to community? That's the legacy that I'd like to leave.
And something that you mentioned in the beginning, Paula, that we never really got into was the therapy of the words, because you were saying it's all about human connection. How do you think, I mean, I think a lot of people listen to music when they're going through good times, tough times, challenging times, when they have new adventures they're about to embark on that might be scary, because music is poetry. So how could people use poetry to get them through those moments in their lives?
Well, you landed on a very important point, and it's a transfer of thought from that to understanding that we do it all the time. People often will, maybe if they're religious, they'll go to their Bible and they're reading something to comfort them. People will, as you just said, listen to a song and it will comfort them. People often go and seek friendship with others, and they're listening to the other person's words to comfort them. It's the same thing. It's a transfer of thought, though. Oh, I can go to a poem, and a poem can comfort me. I could write my feelings out in a diary, and that could comfort me. So the transfer of thought is to, I think, remove that poetry was just something I learned in high school, and that it can also be a self-help tool. And there's a lot of scientific and psychological proof that poetry and in overcoming issues through writing is very, very therapeutic. So it's not just me saying this. This has been proven by several great theorists. One that I follow is Kate Adams. Therapeutically, we do it all the time. You know, bibliotherapy is a thing.
And Paula, what do you think is the most rewarding part about being a poet?
Well, I don't think I'd be able to live without it. It's part of me. It's in my soul. And it's a way for me to emotionally and spiritually connect with friends and myself, my journey, my personal journey. So I've gotten a lot out of it. I've grown as a human being because of it.
Do you think, to an extent, even though we're not the poet in residence or the former poet laureate, do you think we're all poets?
Absolutely. It's so wonderful that you asked that question. haven't you in your own moment in time written out a lovely sentence to someone on a Hallmark card? You know, haven't you every once in a while put your arm around someone and said something so meaningful that to that person, they've just given you the biggest hug and thank you so much for your caring words? Yeah, we're all poets.
All right. So too. And I also would like to just quickly ask, how do you stay like grounded and inspired, right, amid the noise of the digital age, as we are part of everything technology now, like technology has taken over? So how do you stay grounded and in the noise of the digital age?
It's hard, Lydia. It's so hard because there's so much noise. That also goes along with that other poem I wrote about remove the litter. The idea of taking care of oneself and choosing self first is very difficult. So, I'm not perfect. So I'm right there with you, Lydia. I go through peaks and troughs too. Sometimes I don't want to watch the news. I don't want to listen to any of the talking heads, and I just shut myself off from it and just focus on, you know, cleaning my own house, sort of say, you know. So we have to go through those moments. It's okay to, and I think you'll agree with me, it's okay to shut down if you have to.
Yes, I definitely agree with you with that one. Like, it can get very loud, and all you just want to do is just, you want peace and quiet.
And before we go, we've touched on a lot of different subjects. If there's anything you want people to take away from our interview, our conversation, what is it?
Simple, two words, poetry heals.
Paula, we thank you very much for coming on our show today, the One World Community Radio Show. And we thank you for all your support of the show. I see the stuff that you write about it. It's all very kind. So we thank you for that.
Yes, I love this show. Lydia, love hearing you. Cody, great to see you and hear you. And Ricky, thank you so much for having me. All of you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paula.
Thank you, Paula, because you always say this show helps keep free frequency radio free. You always say that about it.
That's right. That's what we need to do. We need to keep access to our radio. We need to keep radios in our cars. We need to make sure that, and fortunately, let me just say, here in the United States, the government did have an AM radio for every vehicle act in 2003. So we have to keep radio free.
And hopefully people like you, myself and Lydia, can all do that in what we're doing. Paula, we thank you so much for coming on our show today. You have been listening to the One World Radio Community Show on 88.7 FM WRHU Hempstead and 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh Radio Congi Tech and 99.5 FM Bush Radio, the mother of community radio in Cape Town, South Africa. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio Program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
of the One World Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the One World of Community Radio.
Sound FM, WRHU Radio Hofstra University, 89.5 FM Bush Radio, the mother of community radio, 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh. You're listening to the One World Community Radio Show. I'm Ricky Hubert. We have our new great co-host, enthusiastic co-host in Cape Town, Kusi Veto on the line. Kusi, what's going on?
Fine, man. Cape Town, finally, we have a sun. Everybody's happy because it's so cold at night. But yeah, we have sun, so which means a lot of people will be able to do outside activities like laundries. But everybody knows in Cape Town at night, ooh, so cold.
And Kusi, I remember you were telling me Bush Radio has a very exciting event coming up to celebrate the 30th anniversary. Do you want to tell people about that when we have the opportunity?
Oh, yes. So Bush Radio in celebrating a jazz woman, a woman in jazz, actually. Where actually in August in South Africa, we have we're calling it the Women's Month, celebrating women and obviously highlighting some of the issues regarding women. So with that, also it's Bush Radio's celebrating 30 years in broadcasting. So it's also accompanying it that. With the concert that they will be having it. So we're calling it A Woman in Jazz, where Bush Radio will be celebrating, actually calling it Woman in Jazz in celebration of Bush Radio's 30 years of licensed broadcasting. It will be at the Artscape, and it will be on a Saturday on the 9th of August. Already Bush Radio has been selling tickets, quickly.
Very quickly. So get your tickets, right?
Yes, please get your tickets, and also in support of Women in Jazz and Bush Radio. It will be at the Artscape.
Very, very nice. And we have a great show for you today. We are joined by Mr. Alex Garrett. Alex, host of the One Leg Up podcast. Alex, how are you today?
Oh, it's so bad. It's so fun to be back on. And I love what you guys at One World Radio are doing. So I'm honored that you have included me today.
Well, we're honored that you're here. So to start, tell us about what you do with your podcast and how you got into the exciting world of radio.
All right. Well, actually, that's going to be the anniversary coming up in August of me and radio here in New York City. Salem Media Group welcomed me in August of 2013. And I started out with Curtis Sliwa, who was then on our 970 side, the news talk side. And I gradually ended up in the Christian world as well, taught on MCA, you know, working on, with different hosts there. So it's been quite a journey. Now I'm in the production department of Salem Media Group, New York. So when we met in the hallways of 570-970, Ricky, I was all over the place, as were you, getting prepared for our big Pastors Appreciation event, and I was doing the production on that side of things. So the one leg up network, well, I try and talk about adaptability and accessibility as well as accountability, meaning we got to hold, you know, different politicians that are not helping out the disabled community accountable. But more so, we got to be, there's got to be a network out there that's going to help bridge the gap between the disabled community and those brands that serve the disabled community. So when I bring on people who have one leg up on life, I'm hoping they help others have one leg up as well. The whole point is to encourage people to have one leg up on life, whether it's through my guests or the different brands I work with through the podcast. Do you guys have any more questions? Because, you know, it's been quite a journey with the podcast. I started to see that the news wasn't being delivered enough to my generation, to the generations after me and whatnot. So I started up the podcast. It's gone through so many iterations. And we started out as Covering the Base with Alex Garrett. Now it's like Up with Alex Garrett. It's been through so many name changes.
You know, I was saying congratulations first on everything that you have achieved. You're such an inspiration, especially with your life story. When I started to look on it, I want to know you. I know that we once had a guest. I think last week was also, you know, disabled but managing to do a lot of things. I want to know, you know, with you, you know, as somebody with one leg but still you're managing to do a lot, especially in media. How do you feel? Do people judge you based on how you look, or they feel like, oh, Shem, let me do it? Or do you feel like they own it because they see you doing everything like as a person or regarded as normal in the society?
I think it's because I myself don't let my disability define me, and I am surrounding myself with others who don't let their disability define me on the podcast. Like, we bring on people who are literally doing work with their brands, with their communities, and smashing stigmas. That's another thing I like to say, is we're all smashing stigmas, and we try and encourage others who have a disability to step out into the world. I do feel like there are some people who sort of stick in this certain, how do you say, not sheltered life, but certain way of life where they feel like they can't do anything. Well, I bring on people who say, yes, you can do it. You know, that's the whole point, is you too can have one leg up on life. Do I feel judged, though? Not entirely. In fact, I can make this announcement on One World, which is a bit of an update from last year's show when Cody and Andy and Jamie had me on. I was very thankful they had me on. I ended up winning a grant for my podcast and for the One Leg Up Alex brand last week. So I think, you know, bringing out that message to places like One World Radio is helping the show grow, and I appreciate you guys for helping me grow the show and helping us continue this mission of helping others as well. Because the accessibility conversation, disability conversation, the access doesn't go away. I mean, a real life story is the other day an elevator was not working for me or my fiance, who's also disabled. And so we had a whole rigmarole to get her down from the subway platform. But that's the issue. There is never 24-hour accessibility anywhere, and that has to change. I mean, we're in the 2025, we're in the 21st century. Why are elevators out of service for a whole weekend when people who are disabled have to commute through the city? It's like these companies don't take it into consideration that people with disabilities are always moving, always on the go, and they need that, you know, the disabled community needs that recognition from these companies.
Alex, I'm curious, because I was reading about you last night, and obviously we met in person at the event. I was reading that you go through New York City on a rollerblade with your one leg, right? Something along those lines. What is it like navigating the city and New York City and the subway systems? Because it's a very busy, chaotic place. And as Kusi was mentioning, one of our previous guests, when she was mentioning Kimberly Minto and she was mentioning disabilities, touched on that issue of navigation and travel. So how do you kind of go through that?
Oh, and Kimberly, I got to meet her last week as well at the Viscardi Center, Iona University, IdeaSpark. Great person, and I do recommend Sitting Beauty. She's got a lot of great content there. Navigating the city is not even having my headphones on all the time. Like, I feel like, as you say, Ricky, it's too chaotic. So I have to be more attentive than maybe the average person, because I'm a little, not skittish, but I'm always a little nervous that a car might make the wrong turn or not want to wait for someone to cross the street, disabled or not, right? So it is a navigation. However, when I do feel comfortable, you could see me flying down 6th Avenue, lifting my crutches up off the ground, and I'm literally rollerblading down 6th Avenue or the other avenues on just the leg without any help from the crutches. It's kind of fun when I get to do that.
I want to know, in terms of you having the love of podcasting, you know?
Yeah.
Journalism. How it all started, like from school to, was there a favorite, radio show that you listened to or podcast?
Love that. Well, you know, I was growing up in radio, listening to radio. My dad and mom loved radio, and my dad certainly had me listening to it all the time. But I was at the age in 10th grade where I said, this is what I want to do. And I started listening to one of the local radio stations in New York City. I said, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. I always get excited when I get to hear something I just produced on the air 2 minutes later. Like this.
What if the second deadliest cancer in men and women could be prevented? Would you try to avoid the pain? And what if you could protect yourself without leaving your home? Colorectal cancer is highly preventable. Screening is important, safe, and most people have options. Ask your doctor which